AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
Well, looky there, day 3 already underway. Day 2 of Pro Farmers Crop Tour turned out to be an eye-popper for corn yield potential. Meanwhile, the markets, for the most part, are off to a, well, we'll call it a decent start. Beans might be an exception, but we'll wait for the close to judge. We continue coverage from the annual Crop Tour straight ahead. Live from this special Crop Tour edition of Hump Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll check in with Brian Grady on the eastern leg of the tour, and later, Chip Flory joins from way out west. Well, not as way out as he was once before. After the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Thanks for joining us today for AgriTalk. Whether it's on your favorite ag radio station, your preferred digital device, online, however you're getting to us, doggone it, I'm glad that you're here. Day 3 is, in fact, underway. We'll be checking in, of course, with tour directors from both the eastern and western legs. Well, maybe there's some scouts hanging around. I mean, whoever we can throw a net over and bring on for some perspective, you best believe we're going to do that. I'm your pal, Davis Michelson, behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk for the remainder of the week here as Chip's a little tied up. He's out there on the western leg, as, you know, if you've been listening, obviously. And his insights have been fantastically phenomenal the whole week so far, and we're looking forward to more from him and from Brian Grady. Man, Brian has really found some quite the corn yield out there on the eastern leg of the tour, the whole eastern belt. There were some pretty decent expectations. USDA had Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana pegged for record yields this year on corn, and man, I'm here to tell you, Brian is finding that. Now, once again, let me just clarify that statement, because I feel like I can't say USDA and Crop Tour in the same sentence without a little clarification. The idea of the tour is not to prove or disprove USDA's numbers. Yes, USDA does have the, would you call it, the premier benchmark figure out there at this point. But really, and Brian is great at this, he goes out there with an open mind just to see, just to observe. It's very scientific, actually, if you really think about it. He's out there to gather his own data. And, well, of course, the same is true. The same is true for the entire Crop Tour. But the whole point is not to either prove or disprove USDA's numbers, but rather to gather our own data, which, by the way, we've banked 29 years of Crop Tour data on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. So we can draw our own comparisons, our own conclusions, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. And we'll get Brian Grady up here in the next segment to talk about that Indiana crop. I'll give you the results here in just a second, but dude, this is quite the yield potential figure. Remember, they're measuring yield potential. And then, of course, Chip Flory later on in the show. So, scouts on day 2, Pro Farmer Crop Tour measured average corn yield potential of 182.6 bushels per acre for Nebraska, which compares to 175.2 bushels per acre last year for the state and 175.6 for the three-year average. Soybean pod counts in a 3-by-3-foot square averaged at 1226 for Nebraska. Compare that to last year, 1298, and the three-year average of 1269. Now, Indiana, moving over to the eastern belt, Indiana samples resulted in an average corn yield of, get this, 193.5, repeat, 193.5 bushels per acre, way above 179.8 bushels observed last year and 174.5 bushels for the three-year average. Pod counts in the 3-by-3-foot square averaged 1,240 for Indiana. Compare that to 1,281 last year on tour, 1,172 for the three-year average. Moving on, World Weather Inc. continues to expect significant rainfall over the next 7 days for the Northern Plains and Canada's prairies, with the weather watcher saying the greatest rain will come through Thursday and Friday. The upper Midwest could also catch some rain. Neil Kashari, the president of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve, was pressed on his stance on digital assets at a regional economic summit in Montana Tuesday. He claimed that the crypto space bankrolls illegal activities and is full of scams. Quote, I was more optimistic about crypto and Bitcoin 5 or 6 years ago, said the central banker. But he continued, so far what I've seen, 95% fraud, hype, noise, and confusion. Kashkari argued that the dollar remains strong because of no restrictions, because of restrictions on its creation and use. No one can mint their own U.S. currency, and that's for good reason, he said. Top Democrats plan House votes next week on a budget resolution that could clear a path for future passage of the $3.5 trillion 10-year social and environmental package. Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said in a conference call among House Democrats that he'd like the chamber to approve the budget resolution next Tuesday. The budget's congressional approval would prevent Republicans from killing the subsequent $3.5 trillion bill, likely this fall, from bill-killing Senate filibusters. Senator Chuck Grassley expressed his disbelief that Democrats can pass a tax proposal that includes a transfer tax on inherited assets that would nullify the benefits of stepped-up basis, saying, quote, I don't think they have the votes to do it, and I don't think you're going to find it in a bill that comes to the floor of the U.S. Senate, Grassley said Tuesday. And finally, container ships continue to stack up again off Southern California's jammed ports as a flood of imports and log jams in domestic logistics networks hits operations at the biggest U.S. gateway for seaborne trade. 37 container ships were anchored off the adjacent ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach in recent days, according to the Marine Exchange of Southern California. That's the highest number since February. Aboard, hundreds of thousands of boxes stuffed with goods bound for manufacturers and retailers as U.S. businesses hustle to restock inventories and prepare for the holiday shopping season. Christmas is right around the corner, gang. Now let me bring in Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. Margie, good morning. Great to hear from you again today.
Hi, Davis. Good morning.
Now you're, let's see, talking about the new AGCO application lineup. You've got one specifically that you'd like to highlight and what it means for the future of that series. Give us a little bit.
Yeah, so this is the first machine branded both with the Fendt and Rogator names. And the product team is saying that this is ushering in a new era of application equipment for AGCO, notably so because Rogator will now live under the Fendt brand umbrella. But specific to the Fendt Rogator 900, this is a machine with full season versatility. Okay, Davis. So they're from the cab, one button to transform from a standard clearance machine to a high clearance machine in less than 45 seconds. They can also change this machine over from a liquid to dry system in less than 2 hours. It's got all the pumping and plumbing equipment to make that transition even easier. So a really versatile machine, and AGCO is looking to elevate its application series now with the Fendt Rogator 900.
That's quite the doohickey if it can go from wet to dry all with the same machine.
So there is a lot of availability of machines with that capability. Many of them will be on display at next week's Maggie Show in Bloomington, Illinois. And I think the last I heard that Maggie will be able to offer its well-known ride and drives. So folks can go out to Maggie and get in the equipment and see exactly how it operates.
Hey, Margie, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks, Davis.
Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. All right, Davis Michelson here. We're underway with AgriTalk this morning. Thanks for tuning in. We've got crop tour updates coming from the Eastern Leg from Brian Grady. Straight ahead, stick around.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert. Featuring country music star Easton Corbin, the concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD-TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert, September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD-TV.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD-TV. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Good morning. Glad to have you along. Thank you for tuning in. Davis Michelson here, in for Chip, who's out on the Western leg, although he's lurking. He's lurking. Always lurking. He's not far. Right now, I want to bring in Brian Grady, who's out on the Eastern leg of the tour. Good morning, Mr. Grady. Just give us a quick rundown, your current location, current conditions. What are you seeing out the windshield right now?
Well, we are just south of the Quad Cities in west central Illinois. So we've come through central and then up through west central here so far this morning. It is partly sunny or sunny and partly cloudy and about 80 degrees. So nice, beautiful, nice summer day here.
A little warmer as you move westward, sounds like. Yesterday you were sitting around 76. Now here already you've bumped up a few degrees.
Yeah, it's this is good weather though. Terrific weather, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you get into third week of August and you're well into the 90s and so, you know, this is beautiful.
Absolutely. Well, Beej, we got to talk about that Indiana crop before we move on to your observations so far today. You know, I like to pull quotes from you. You got to be careful what you say around me because I'm writing it all down. You were, in reference to the Indiana corn crop, rock solid was the term that you used. And you also mentioned that the range of yield potential that you were finding in those corn fields was relatively tight. To me, that says consistency. To me, that says a pretty darn good crop. And your Indiana samples resulted in an average corn yield of 193.5. That's well above the 179.8 that you saw last year. Man, that's 193.5. That's a heck of a number.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was very consistent. Probably the best Indiana corn crop I've seen. You know, usually in Indiana, you don't see quite the consistency that you do in the good years in Illinois and Iowa. But boy, it really looked consistent this year and rock solid, like I said, last night. They're sitting on a terrific crop if they can get to the finish line. There's a pocket of dryness there in the west central area of the state that, you know, notably drier through there right now. But they need some rains just to finish that off and hold on to that yield potential. But very good crop in Indiana this year.
Well, and in fact, was it yesterday? I'm already starting to lose track of time when you drove through what you characterized as a pretty decent rain. Was that yesterday?
Yeah, that was in central, west central, or east central Illinois yesterday afternoon.
Okay.
Came down pretty hard. In some of those areas that already had heavy rains the previous week. But as those rains, I don't know what happened to them as they moved off to the east, but they would have provided a needed drink there in some of those areas further to the east.
So at a plus 190 yield potential showing right now, you must be right in the sweet spot of crop development in that corn yield or that for the corn plants themselves.
Yeah, it wasn't a super mature crop. Some of the samples were starting to dent, those types of things. Some weren't quite too dent yet, but I'm not worried with crop maturity over there in Indiana. It looks like it's kind of on that slow cook that we talk about in a lot of cases. Maybe some of the drier areas just being sped up a tad, but not enough at this point in time, I don't think, to cause serious concern.
Mm-hmm. Well, now your comments on the beans, they were clean, but a little more variable than the corn. Your pod counts in a 3x3 foot square averaged 1,240 for Indiana compared to 1,281 last year, 1,172 for the 3-year average. So just a little better than the 3-year average on the beans. But did you find a little bit more consistency along the way? Or what's your thought on those beans?
Yeah, I don't think the bean crop in Indiana is as good as their corn crop, to be honest with you. But beans are a wild card. I mean, we count pods. We don't do a yield calculation. So, if you want to compare USDA on August 1, they have the state at 60 bushel and up 3.4% from last year. our pod counts were down 3.2%. So it went in the opposite direction of what USDA did with their yield there. So it's all going to be about the finish on that crop. There are pods there. And if they get the rains, they can plump up and produce, potentially a record yield. But there aren't as many pods as what there were last year in the state, based on what we found.
Now, you've used some very descriptive terms. The word phenomenal was thrown around in Ohio. Rock solid yesterday on Indiana. You're a word guy. You're an editor. You're a writer. You use words well. What's your word for what you're seeing so far this morning?
Well, like I said, we came through Central and up through West Central Illinois, and USDA put a big, huge 214 yield on the state of Illinois. So the question is, can we get to that point? And I don't know. We've had a range from 165 on our six samples up to 247. So quite the range. The one was an outlier, that 165, and as was the top end of the range. Most of the others have been congregated in the, let's call it 205 to the 225 range. So we're finding really good yields on these fields, but we need to. I mean, if you're going to get to USDA's number, you need to, basically every field needs to have, be a strong number, and you can't have many clunkers at all. So we'll see. I'm one of 11 routes, like I've said, throughout the week, and we'll see where the numbers are when we come in at the end of the day. Some of those northern routes are going to get into some wind damage. Not as broad-based as what last year's derecho was through Iowa and into parts of Illinois and even a little bit into Indiana. So not nearly that broad-based, but the damage localized was probably just as much. So we'll see what those routes return. And then, there's always some areas within every state, it seems like in every year, that just don't live up to the expectations. And so we'll have to see when all that data is put together at the end of the day.
So what are you seeing that might get in the way of Illinois reaching that level? I hate to peg that 214 as a, that's USDA's number, whatever. Reaching its full potential,
right?
Let's say. What's in the way of Illinois reaching its full potential?
Well, the kernels on the tips of those ears, whether it has enough energy to maintain all those kernels, so that grain length that we're measuring right now. I will say that my samples, it hasn't been super big, super long ears. They've been, some of them have been girthy, but smaller. But the ear counts are just rock solid right now, really, really high. We've had every single ear count in our six samples was over 100. So
Wow.
100 to 120 in that range, every single sample.
So the components are there for a super, super great Illinois crop. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, the ear numbers are definitely, I think it's a matter of how much of the length that we're measuring right now it holds on to into the finish, if it would happen to be, dry over the next month or so ahead of harvest.
How dry is it? I mean, I've sort of been anticipating that as I speak to you, the further west you go, the more dryness you're going to see, but I haven't heard you mention it yet this morning.
It's not extreme by any means. I mean, the guys out west are finding far worse dryness than what we are. I mean, everything's relative. So when I talk about dryness over here, it's not the drought situation by any means that they're facing in the western Corn Belt.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, we best hustle here. Talk to me about the beans you've seen on your route so far this morning.
Yeah, we had a clunker that came in at 387, and then we had top end at 1564. So aside from that 387, everything's been above 1,000, and 1647 was our high end. Now that I look at the sheet, I just missed that one as I was gazing over it. But I'd say that the average is probably about 1,200 or so, 1,300 or so on the six samples we've pulled so far.
What about development there? Does it seem like do these beans seem happy?
Yeah, they just need a drink or two here into the end of the growing season so they can fill out the beans within the pods and the factories there with the pods. Now it's a matter of how plump they get and how that ends up yielding. But, you know, USDA has got big expectations for the state at 64 right. bushels per acre.
Disease, weed, any bugs, anything at all?
No major concerns on either of those fronts, Davis. Pretty clean crop, to be honest with you. You know, one of our samples had some volunteer corn in it, quite a bit of volunteer corn in it. But, you know, aside from that, pretty clean crop.
Brian Grady, thanks for your insights on your route so far today. Drive safely. We'll talk to you this afternoon, pal.
All right, you bet, Davis.
So, Brian feels pretty good about the Illinois crops as well. The Eastern Belt continues to perform. We'll find out how the Western Belt looks from Chip Lorre himself right after these words.
From August 23rd through the 27th, your Farm Journal Field Days in-person experience will take you on the road to live events at America's top farms. Can't join in person? Register for the online portion to network with fellow farmers online and find original content for every segment of agriculture. No matter how you spend your time at Farm Journal Field Days, you're guaranteed a great time. There's a lot more to know about this week-long event, so visit farmjournalfielddays.com today.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
When other guys experience paralysis, he'll save the day with insightful analysis. I'm talking about Dan Vaught from Pro Farmer. Good morning, Mr. Vaught. Dan, take me over to soybeans to begin. They kind of don't seem to know what to do this morning, under a little bit of pressure at the moment.
Yeah, I think the market's kind of falling through to the downside after the big break yesterday. Like I say, the market is kind of just, I think, suffering from some technical follow-through more than anything else.
All right. The wheat market, and here again, not a whole lot of movement, but at least we're headed at least slightly higher. I've got the hard reds up around 4 cents. The others, soft red and spring wheat, just right around unchanged.
Yeah, I think the wheat markets are kind of starting to bid for acreage at this point. You know, the markets has rallied a lot, but really they are going to have to get more acreage if they're going to, you know, get higher to get more acreage planted this fall.
All right. And speaking of hovering around unchanged, here we go again with the corn. It feels like range-bound trade to me, Dan.
Yeah, I think they're competing a bit with the wheat. You know, talk about China importing a lot more corn during July probably helped a bit, but not a whole lot else seems to be shaking.
Well, the feeder cattle are sure fired up. September up 2.25 to start this morning.
Yeah, I am a bit surprised by that myself. I can't say I have a real strong reason other than the leadership in the Fed cattle. The strength of Fed cattle are showing, you know, maybe in persuading folks that we are finally going to break out above 130 at some point this fall on the cash
right.
market and pull mm-hmm. everything else upward.
Outstanding. And we've got some light strength going on in the lean hog futures. That's Dan Vaught from Pro Farmer. Thanks, Dan.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Glad you've tuned in. And just a note for you, a reminder, when each day wraps up, there's sort of a wrap-up conversation from, you know, on the ground. They've got meetings scheduled where people can go to a physical location and hang out and talk directly to the scouts and tour directors. But you can tune in if you're not nearby one of those locales, agweb.com/croptour, agweb.com/croptour, 7 p.m. Central Time. And you can check it out. Our very own Clinton Griffiths is the moderator of that discussion. Scouts, tour directors, all sorts of people show up. A cast of several will be on hand to make clear these results and to discuss findings. Right now,
Davis. I just want to let you know that I like the part when you asked Brian Grady what he was seeing through his mm-hmm. windshield right now, because I was under the impression that these people at least got out of their cars and walked up to the corn and the beans and didn't just like do a drive-by and say, well, it looks good here. Let's keep going.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, he is the director, though, you know, and I know our own Chip Lorre has got his daughter there acting as his minion. Hey, go out and check those beans, will you? I got to do this national radio broadcast.
Well, right now she's in a cornfield, okay?
Oh, she's in a cornfield. Let her switch to corn for once in a while. That's right. Big of you. That's good stuff. How you doing, Chip? Good morning.
We're doing good. We're doing good. Absolutely.
Sure, glad to hear that. Dude, I did not expect to see a 182.6 bushel print from Nebraska based on our conversation yesterday.
Yeah, the irrigated corn definitely came through in the state of Nebraska. Now, comments from last night, irrigated corn in Nebraska is irrigated corn in Nebraska. You got to expect it to perform every year, but there have been some years where it has not performed and it's set back a bit because of too hot, whatever it is, planting conditions stunk. You know, there's many reasons why irrigated corn in Nebraska might not perform. Well, we really didn't experience too much of any of those red flag issues for the Nebraska corn crop. Therefore, it really came through. The dryland corn is off from what the irrigated corn is, and that's normally the case, but it's been more typically in the 20-25 bushel range. This year, it's closer to that 35-40 bushel range that the dryland corn in Nebraska isn't keeping up. Now, We always talk about the two different crops, Davis, in Nebraska. And one of the things that I emphasize is one of the reasons that we typically measure Nebraska low is because of the area of the state that we cover. It's more dryland corn than it is irrigated corn. Therefore, we typically would pull about 40% irrigated samples, 60% dryland samples. The state is 60% irrigated, 40% dryland. This year, the number changed, and it has been changing. We've been moving up from 40% on our irrigated sample number, so 41, 42, 43%, something like that. This year, we didn't inch higher. We leapt higher in our irrigated sample count, got all the way to 50%. Half of the samples that we pulled were irrigated. So that's going to move the numbers on ear populations alone. It's going to move the numbers because the guys that are irrigating are going to plant a higher population at the start. The guys on dry land are always on drought watch. So they plant a little bit lower population, but it showed up in our ear counts.
So it wasn't necessarily a case that more growers are irrigating. In other words, they're bringing in infrastructure to irrigate. They're spending money. I'm going to go ahead and put in a pivot over here. It's just more that they've adjusted their crop mix, particularly in the dryland areas. Is this what you're saying?
Not only the dryland areas, but in the half of our bean samples were irrigated too, Davis. So there's been some investment in infrastructure. We had the conversation last night about how much further can we push it? How much more irrigation can we add in Nebraska? And it's not easy. It's not easy to get the permits to go ahead and drill the well and start pulling from the aquifer or from a river or from wherever. It's not easy to do it, but half of our bean samples were irrigated this year too. So somehow, some way, we just got the big bump. Now, if I take that corn number that we ended up with, you said at 182.35, if we take that and adjust it back to 43% irrigated, 57% dry land, it gets us right to about 180 bushels per acre.
Okay.
Which instead of a 4.1% increase from a year ago, would be a 2.8% increase from a year ago, which is, the numbers are what the numbers are. And I'm not doing that to get to this conclusion, but USDA on August 1 had the Nebraska corn crop up 2.8%.
Huh. Well, how do you like that?
There you go.
Before we move on, cause you're into Western Iowa now, aren't you, by now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we move on to that, talk to me about the dry land. What I'm assuming both corn and beans in Nebraska just flat need rain to finish
strong? Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The rain that was in the forecast for Thursday has been pushed back to Friday, and the chance for that rain to be widespread continues to pull back. So if they weren't running the sprinklers or irrigation yesterday and Monday, they're probably getting out there and getting things fired up today, because they know both the corn crop and the bean crop is going to need a drink before we can finish things off. So there's a great need for some water on both corn and dryland corn and soybeans to wrap things up. Without rain, Davis, that dryland crop is going to be significantly worse a week from today than what it is right now.
Okay. Okay. Last year, speaking to Jeff Wilson in Western Iowa, felt like a remake of the movie Sahara. What are your observations so far this morning, just generally?
Okay. Well, Emily and I deadheaded to the northwest part of the state. I'm in Sioux County already, which I'm way, way, way out in front of most of the other routes. The other routes have been in the southwest part of the state, the west central part of the state. Emily and I deadheaded up here so that we can get all the counties in the first crop district in northwest Iowa. We saw the variability going down the road, but I've talked to a couple of the scouts out there. They're seeing good results out of southwest Iowa on corn, good results out of west central Iowa in crop district 4. The soybeans, there's some variability in the counts that are coming in. Obviously, when you get a dry season like this, there's going to be that variability. But I think we're seeing more weed pressure in western Iowa than what we saw in Nebraska. I'm not sure exactly what, why, how that is happening. If it's a growth on the soybeans that are holding things back or whatever it is, but things are a little messier in western Iowa than what they were in Nebraska.
What do the planting dates look like in the areas where we're seeing that excessive weed pressure?
They were early, the crop over here got in on time. It was dry early in the year. And, you know, that's one of the things that we had a conversation with one of the scouts about is, the planting date is showing up because we're still seeing corn that's in the dense stage, but I don't want to discount the potential that once that crop pollinated, we really haven't done anything to slow it down. And we've probably accelerated the process just a little bit once it pollinated. And that's got us to the dense stage. Talked to a grower this morning from northwest Iowa that's got choppers running. So I'm expecting to see that here pretty soon. It's just been pushed. It's an early season. And all of that turns into an early harvest for us. Yeah. You know, hey, Davis, I didn't mention the pod counts.
Yes,
let's have Nebraska. That. 1,226, which was down 5.5% from year ago. USDA on August 1 had the crop up 5.3% from year ago. I think that's some of the dry weather influence, because remember when we got out of South Dakota, I talked about some of the scouts were noting that the top cluster of pods on those plants were aborting. Well, we saw that on the dry land yesterday in Nebraska as well. So maybe some of the optimism that producers had in Nebraska when they filled that survey out for the August 1 number from USDA, maybe they've lost some of that optimism since then because of, you know, we got another two and a half weeks of dry weather under our belt now out there on that dry land crop.
Well, and we'll talk more in the next segment here, but I'm sort of feeling like if you're up in Crop District 1, the northwestern sort of corner of Iowa, there were areas of southern Minnesota and such where producers were pretty optimistic about their chances. Are you far northward enough that you're seeing that in District 1 or not quite yet?
Yeah, I don't want to make that observation yet, Davis. I need to get a few more observations in.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, we've got a 5-minute commercial break coming up. Do you think you can handle it in 5 minutes?
I think I can.
Outstanding. I can't wait to hear what's on the other side of this break. That's Chip Flory out on the Western leg. We talked to Brian Grady. We'll have more from Chip coming up next on AgriTalk. I'm glad that you've tuned in for day three of our coverage of Pro Farmer's annual crop tour. Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Justin Timberlake on crop tour, mama. Yeah. Actually, we couldn't get Justin this year. He wouldn't come out again for crop tour. It's like he doesn't even answer my calls anymore. I don't get it. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. So I tasked Chip with taking that commercial break to take a moment and gather some data, some observations from his surroundings. And let me just, I just want to dramatize what happened during that break off the air that you couldn't hear. Okay. So we're minding our own business and I can still hear Chip, and I hear him. He must have turned his head or stepped out of the truck, and it went something like this.
Hey, Emily, you got a sample there? Oh, oh goodness. Oh,
this is what I heard. I don't know what happened out there. Is Emily all right?
Yeah, she's fine. She's okay. In great shape.
Okay. Okay.
Working
well, what?
Hard counting pods right now. I can see her in the rearview mirror.
Back in the beans. Oh, you got the corn? Yes. Back to the beans. Well, what was
Emily came out of the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Emily came out of the field up in Sioux County with a good average yield on this field from the spot that she was at, 192 bushels per acre. And that's one of the things that I want to remind everybody about when we get into Iowa today in Western Iowa, tomorrow for Eastern Iowa. You know, all the just the unbelievable comments that Brian has made about that Ohio corn crop over there and the Indiana corn crop, 193, 194 from USDA as of August 1, while USDA had Iowa on August 1 at 193. So you got to do something. It's got to be something over here to get to that 193 that USDA is talking about as of August 1. I have no idea if we're going to see enough evidence to support that or not at this point. And with the dry conditions that we've had over, you know, just take a look at the drought monitor, guys. And the dryness is happening at the wrong time of the year. So how is it going to affect the development of that crop, the grain fill of the crop? Is it going to shorten up the grain fill period? If it does any of those things, it makes it harder to get to that 193 that USDA was talking about there.
Well, and you did mention, I mean, so that crop does seem like it's been pushed along as well, which has been a general observation across the entire Western Belt swing so far. You also mentioned some weed pressure on the soybeans in Western Iowa is becoming evident. Talk to me a little bit more about the corn. Any problems in the corn crop?
Well, that's the thing. When this field that Emily was in, and I wouldn't talk about it unless I knew that the conversation about this has already really ramped up, not just in Western Iowa, not just Northern Iowa, but basically across the Corn Belt. And that's the rootworm pressure that we're seeing out there. Emily said that there was some lodging in this field, not from the ear shank over, but from the root ball. So it's full lodging in this field. So that suggests that we've compromised that root system somehow. And you also had the root worms on the ear. Yeah. They were on the ear. So it feels like a corn on corn field, because it was heavily tilled. So this is one of those conversations that has been picking up steam as this season has gone on, that, and I shouldn't just say for this season, I should say for the last several years, it's been ramping up and becoming a bigger and bigger problem that, you know, quite frankly, the seed companies are trying to address in their breeding and their technology.
Now, important to point out, though, that observation comes from simply one field.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's too soon to tell how widespread something like that might be.
Yeah.
But
the only reason I said it was because I know the conversation is happening out here.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So back to my original question there, high hopes among some southern Minnesota growers. I know that they got some rains that parts, more southern parts of Iowa missed out on. You're in the northwest corner, crop district number one. Are you seeing an area that has received sufficient rain or not?
No. I mean, no, we're leaving. There's yield left on the table up here. There's no question. As we see this, you know, you go up through the hills, you can see some of the stress pockets out in the fields. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I'll say it, it's cliche, but it's one of my favorite Ken Ferry lines. You never want your corn crop to have a bad day. And this corn crop has had a few bad days. So we've left yield on the table in northwest Iowa. I'm not saying that it's a bad corn crop. That is not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that it's not everything that it could be in that, you know, in that buster year. It's not a buster year up here. It's a good year, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, knock your socks off.
Okay. Stress pockets. You know, I had a tooth pulled once, and I got the dry sockets. I can't help but think that that's kind of the same type of deal. I don't know if it compares or not, but that's where my mind went. Sure, you're talking about a corn crop that's been pushed along that's got some dry sockets, that's got some stress pockets. Does some rain help improve its chances or just help it maintain what's already there?
Well, for the corn crop, we're not going to turn it away, but for the bean crop especially, we need it. There's no question about that. Some rain right now will stabilize. I don't know if it's going to add any yield to corn, but it would at least stabilize it. But for soybeans, yes, it would add yield at this point. Still green as a gourd. So, you know, put some rain on those beans and let's pump up the size of the bean and we'll gain some yield that way.
So let's see, if I've got this right, you're headed for the big hootenanny tonight in Spencer. Is that tonight?
That's right.
All right. Well, you can check out coverage from Spencer, Iowa, and wherever Brian ends up as well, agweb.com/croptour, 7 p.m. Central Time, agweb.com/croptour, 7 p.m. Central Time. Chip, thanks for joining us. We'll check in with you this afternoon, bro.
Sounds great. See you, Davis.
You bet, Chip. That was Chip Flory, Brian Grady earlier from me, Davis Michelson, Big Apple Joe Stackler. Come back this afternoon.